An aerial view of Los Angeles at night. In yellow letters, Peter Falk as Columbo. Butterfly in shades of grey, guest starring William Shatner.
Coming up, direct from his Los Angeles studio, the hard-hitting, controversial commentator and analyst, Fielding Chase, who plays no favorites, pulls no punches, and tells it like it is. Stay tuned, we shall return following a word from your local station.
In a restaurant lobby, a man with dark brown curly hair is on a payphone.
Come on, Lois, put me through. Yeah, I know the show's on the air. Screw the show. Okay, I'm sorry. Look, Vicky was supposed to meet me and this guy here a half hour ago. I mean, what the hell am I supposed to tell him? Okay, fine, never mind.
The man, Jerry, slams the receiver down and saunters into the large restaurant area, wearing a red shirt, red and cream patterned tie, and jeans, his stomach slightly protruding over his belt. He sits down at a table opposite a man with brown, swept back hair, wearing a dark blue suit, white shirt, and blue diamond patterned tie.
So?
She's not coming. I'm sorry, Lou. The old guy's got her scared to death.
Yeah, that I could tell by the time I got to page 10 of her novel. Love and hate, all wrapped up in one neat package.
So stick around another day.
I can't, Jerry. I promised Mary and the kids I'd spend some time up at the lake.
Yeah, but you are going to show Englander the book.
Soon as I get back. You're sure it's all right with the author, I mean?
Yeah, why wouldn't it be all right? Look, Lou, Vicky's another Ayn Rand trying to bust loose from her cocoon. You and me are going to help her.
Me? I understand. I'm a literary agent. What's your angle?
Personal.
Oh, you mean Fielding Chase. Well, if you're so mad at him, why don't you quit?
I need the money.
You always need the money. And by the way, I was sorry to hear about Murray. I know you guys were together a long time.
Yeah.
Anybody new?
Yeah. There's Ted. He's an actor. Works on a daytime soap opera.
Well, serious?
No, Murray was pretty special. It's gonna take some time to work things out. Come on, let's order.
Good idea.
Later, Jerry's in his red Jeep Grand Cherokee 4x4. He drives down a road passing a hamburger joint while listening to a phone-in show on the radio.
What I mean, Fielding, is like, you know, man, you're always saying these phonies in Congress, they gotta get their act together, right? I mean, the poor. Because, wow, when you think about it, you know, you think about it, I do, we all do. I mean, we're talking about there's a lot of money there. I mean, like, the deficit? Wow, man, the kids are gonna have to pay for it, right?
Jerry enters the radio station.
I know exactly what you mean, my inarticulate friend. But you know as well as I do that unless and until the president is empowered with a line item veto, this country will continue to hemorrhage hundreds of millions of dollars on dams for rivers that don't need damming and roads that lead nowhere. Thanks for the call.
A man in his 60s.
This is Charlie from Independence, Missouri. Hello, Charlie.
Hi, Fielding. A big handshake from the hometown of Harry Truman, the last good president we had.
Well, that's debatable, but since I don't like to speak ill of the dead, let's move on to a livelier topic.
But I want to talk about Harry Truman.
Well, I don't. Goodbye, Charlie.
A young woman's in a production booth.
Margaret from Blossom, Texas. You're on the air.
Fielding, you dear man. I'll be 80 Tuesday.
Well, bless you, my darling, and a happy birthday to you.
Why, thank you. You know, all this stuff I keep hearing about this big hole in the sky over Antarctica, it's frightening me.
Ah, yes, the mysterious ozone depletion. I tell you what, my darling, I'm going to send you a copy of my book. You read Chapter 9. It absolutely destroys the environmental chicken littles who would scare decent people like you. Thank you for your call, and God bless you, sweetheart. That was Margaret from Blossom, Texas. And speaking of large holes filled with nothing but a vacuum, my guest next Wednesday, the 14th, is none other than that distinguished senator from back east. You know who I'm talking about? The Honorable Gordon Madison, who will demonstrate to you good people once and for all why he should be banished permanently to those good old cotton fields back home.
Jerry's in the booth.
So what happened?
Well, I told you I couldn't come.
Then you said you'd get a replacement.
Well, I couldn't, that's all. When I told him I wanted the night off, he had a terrible fit.
Yeah, I bet he did.
Oh, come on, Jerry. I can see one of your friends anytime.
Look, Vicky, Lou Caton's more than just a friend. He's a literary agent, and he loves your book.
My book? You showed him my book, Jerry. I gave that to you to read, nobody else.
Yeah. What were you going to do with it anyway? Leave it on your closet shelf for the next 30 years? Vicky, he loves it. He thinks it's brilliant.
Oh, look, that's very flattering, but...
But what? What? Are you worried about him? Vicky, you are not his property. You've got to get on with your life. There's a big, terrific world out there.
Fielding Chase, news next, back in 5.
And we're out.
Vicky and Jerry are now in a corridor. Fielding leaves the studio to join them.
Oh, Mr. Winters. I was under the impression you were back east tracking down a story.
Yeah, a rumor, Fielding, and it was tracked. You got my report. It was a dead end.
I don't agree. When I see wisps of smoke curling up and around Gordon Madison's elegant coiffure, can flame be far behind.
I busted my butt on that cockamamie lead you handed me. It was nothing, and you know it was nothing.
You see how they turn on me, Victoria? 2 years ago, I plucked this fellow from a police beat on a second-rate newspaper in a third-rate city. Yeah,
taking me from total obscurity to complete anonymity. Thanks, Fielding.
Mr. Winters, I do not suffer ingrates well. Perhaps it's time to terminate our arrangement.
Dad, please.
What, I'm fired? Good. Thanks again. I could use the severance pay.
To say nothing of the unemployment checks for as long as they last. Let's go, Victoria. We have less than 60 seconds.
Look, Vicky, I'll call you later.
Mr. Winters, you will not call her later.
How about if she decides that?
Fielding pulls her into the studio.
Do you have to keep goading him like that?
Oh, Victoria.
Okay, so you're both a couple of pig-headed egotists, and tomorrow you'll hire him back again as usual.
Not this time, Victoria.
6 seconds, Mr. Chase.
Dad.
Not now, Victoria.
4, 3.
Vicky goes into her booth.
And we're back for another hour of National Focus. Your obedient servant, Fielding Chase, ready and able to chat with the brightest of your fuzzy brains. And the inarticulate need not bother dialing valuable time of my tens of millions of listeners. It's far too precious.
In her booth, Vicky answers the phone.
Hi, this is National Focus. What do you want to speak to Fielding about? And what's your name?
A huge hillside mansion. Inside, Fielding's on a speakerphone.
Don't tell me what he said, Phil. The senator contradicts himself every time he says hello.
This happens next week?
Next Wednesday night, and I intend to tear that pretentious popinjay to shreds.
Why is he even doing your show?
He's doing the program because he wants to be reelected. He's also operating under the delusion that he can best me in a battle of wits.
Fat chance.
My sentiments exactly. Double-check the quote he made to the union so I can read it back to him, word for word.
You mean the Teamsters quote?
Exactly. Thank you, Phil. Ooh, that smells good.
Tea.
It's a peace offering on behalf of Jerry Winters.
My God, what is your interest in that man? It can't be romantic.
He's a friend, that's all.
Vicky hands him a cup.
No, Victoria. He's a cheap, no-talent hustler. He's using you to further his own ambition.
Dad, he's not like that.
How would you know?
He strokes her cheek.
You're still just a child.
For God's sake, I'm 25 years old.
Vicky, who has long, curly brown hair, turns...
Anyway, what? Well, look, you're going to find out sooner or later anyway. I've written a book, a novel.
A novel? Stunned.
I know you don't approve.
I didn't say that. I'm surprised, that's all.
Well, Jerry's found me an agent, and he thinks it's good, very good, Dad. And he says he can find me a publisher.
Victoria, I couldn't be happier or prouder of you. I just wish you had let me read it before some stranger.
Well, I guess I was afraid you wouldn't think it good enough.
Well, that's nonsense. Besides, what I think of it isn't the point. This agent, is he any good?
His name is Lou Caton, and he's with Lionel Englander in New York.
Englander? Huh? Well, he's the best. Lionel and I go way back. If you need any help, count on me.
I have an extra copy upstairs. I'll put it on your nightstand.
Of course.
Excitedly, she kisses him and runs out. Fielding's face falls into an anxious gawp. He sits down, slowly curling up the fingers of his shaking right hand, and stares fretfully around the room. Day. Jerry's on an exercise bike outside his dark wood-stained clapboard house.
Yeah.
Yeah, yourself, old buddy.
Hey, Lou, where are you?
In my office. Where else?
What happened to Mary and the kids at the lake?
Sally got tonsillitis, and we just found out the lake was polluted. Listen, Jerry, when I got back 4 days ago, I took Victoria's novel into Englander's office like I promised.
And?
He hated it.
That's a bunch of crap.
I know. There's something else. When I was in Englander's office this morning, he got a call from Fielding Chase. These two guys are old friends. There might be a connection here.
It can't be. Chase doesn't even know about it.
Are you sure about that?
Realization dawns on Jerry's face. Fielding's addressing a conference.
Now, if you'll allow me to conclude on this note of levity, even a talk show host knows to when to leave them begging. I want to thank you all for allowing me to spend these all too brief moments with you. God bless you all.
He's rewarded with a standing ovation.
Thank you.
Jerry comes into the back of the room.
Thank you, Fielding, for sharing your thoughts with us today. And in appreciation, the Alfred Kentworth Realty Group would like to present you with this check for $25,000, a donation to the Fielding Chase Foundation to help you continue your good work.
Thank you.
Fielding holds up the check. Later in a hotel lobby, Jerry peers around a brick pillar. He spots Fielding and steps out.
Fielding!
Good afternoon, Mr. Winters. And good afternoon.
That was quite a performance in there, Fielding. $25,000. Jeez. Last time I looked, you were about to barbecue those guys over an open fire. I guess money talks, huh?
If that's an accusation, my friend, be prepared to back it up in court.
Look, how those schmucks waste their money is their business. I want to talk about Vicky's book.
Book?
Look, I just talked to my friend in New York. You had her novel rejected.
That's a lie.
You want me to prove it? I'm a pretty good investigator, remember?
I'm warning you once, my friend. Stay away from things that are none of your business.
But Vicky is my business.
I think not. Her future is with me, not off pursuing some meaningless pipe dream of a literary career.
You know what your problem is, Fielding? You're a sick, possessive old man. You want her tied to you forever.
She's my child.
She's not your child. She's your foster daughter. And you want my opinion? Your attitude towards her isn't exactly fatherly.
Fielding's eyes blaze. He slaps Jerry with the back of his hand.
I guess that must have hit pretty close to home, huh?
Stay away from her, Winters.
What are you gonna do? Kill me?
Fielding glares maniacally at Jerry.
Yes.
How? Talk me to death? Let me tell you something, old man. I'm not only going to take you down professionally, I'm going to take away Vicky as well. You count on it.
Jerry strides off. Fielding looks around him and, spotting an audience, shrugs.
Disgruntled employee. Ex-employee.
Quite honestly, Mr. Chase, the senator is doing this broadcast against my advice.
Afraid he can't handle himself? I could always debate an empty chair. Come to think of it, the chair might be more responsive.
Senator is more than capable of handling you and your listeners, providing we're playing on a level field.
Meaning
no dirty tricks, Mr. Chase. No rigged phone calls.
I don't need any help outthinking the senator, but I won't be tossing him any softballs either.
No, I don't suppose you will. Until Wednesday, then.
The auburn-haired woman, who's in her 30s and walks with a stick, gets into a lift. Fielding turns to Vicky.
Soon to be fun. Oh, by the way, I heard from Senator Clavin this morning. He's looking for a guest spot a couple of weeks from now. Call his people and see if you can work things out.
I can't. I mean, look, I'm not going to be here in a couple of weeks.
What do you mean?
I mean, I'm flying to New York next Tuesday with Jerry.
But why?
You know why. He told me what happened, the fight in the hotel, how you killed my book with Englander.
No, Victoria.
No, don't tell me no, Dad. Don't lie to me. You told me you liked it.
I do. It's good. But I know in my heart, as you do.
He shuts his office door.
It's not the best work you're capable of.
He takes her hand. She pulls away.
Do you understand the position you're in, child? As my foster daughter, you will come under terrible scrutiny. My enemies will be waiting to carve you into pieces, to hurt me by hurting you.
Dad, I'm not sure that's true.
Well, I am, Victoria. When your mother died 15 years ago, I gave you more than my name. I took you into my home and my heart. And I swore that I would do everything in my power to nurture you and protect you.
Dad.
Don't you understand that everything I've done has been for you? And when I'm gone, everything I have will be yours.
I'm sorry. Look, I'm grateful. You know how grateful I am. But this is something I have to do. Come on, Dad. It's not like I'm running away from home. You'll always be a big part of my life. But please, you have to let me do this.
Tears in her eyes, she reaches out to touch his cheek. He snatches hold of her wrist and then guiltily presses the back of her hand against his lips. Sobbing, she turns and hurries out. Fielding twists his lips in bitter reflection, the thin graying moustache across his upper lip wrinkling. He picks up the phone on his desk and dials a number. He takes a deep breath.
Hello. Jerry, Fielding Chase. I've just talked to Victoria.
Yeah, well, look, if you call to threaten me again...
No. Nothing like that. Oh, Jerry, I'm so sorry. I lost my temper and I said some things I shouldn't have.
Yeah, well, I can't help you, Fielding. She's determined to go.
I know, and I won't try and stop her. I just want to work things out as amicably as possible.
Meaning what?
I think that I can be helpful to both of you. Look, Jerry, I'd like to meet you tomorrow.
Say, late in the day, would you do me a favor? Would you call me at the house at 4 o'clock? And we can arrange to get together.
Jerry, I can't beat you on this one. I just want to salvage something.
Okay. I'll call you.
Tomorrow, 4 o'clock. I'll be waiting for your call. And thanks, Jerry. You won't be unhappy. I promise.
He puts the receiver down, his eyes glazed, his mouth agape. Colored Mercedes convertible, with its black fabric roof up, heads along a narrow, cracked concrete road, passing the gates of large houses set amongst the trees. The car stops, and a man wearing a blue baseball cap, red and white checked shirt, grey slacks, and large sunglasses gets out. He walks across the road and into the bushes. Jerry's in his living room on the phone.
Okay, so it's all set. Yeah, Vicky and I will be flying in Tuesday afternoon. I got us booked at the Wyndham.
Chase can't be too happy.
He's not. Neither was Ted.
You broke it off?
This morning. He actually took it pretty well. I think he saw it coming.
The man in the baseball hat watches Jerry from behind bushes, having a clear view into the living room through its wall of small paned windows. The man's Fielding. He steps away from his hiding place.
Lou, you're not hearing me. I don't want a dime for this.
Oh, come on, Jerry, not even a finder's fee.
Fielding treads carefully down some wooden steps into a covered storage area by a glass-paned back door. Reaching into his pocket, he takes out a key and inserts it into the brass lock. He pushes the door open and steps into a utility room, closing the door quietly behind him.
Me? Yeah, well, I'll find something.
Fielding tiptoes down a staircase.
To tell you the truth, this job's been making me feel real dirty for a real long time now. No, nothing. I mean it. Look, I'm doing this for Vicky. The kid needs a break.
Fielding appears in the doorway. Jerry's back to him.
Yeah, I remember. But hey, what's money anyway? Look, if things get really rough, I can always write a book. No, look, old buddy, I gotta run. The old man wants me to call him. I don't know, some last-ditch attempt to save face. It's not gonna work, but what the hell, it'd be fun to hear him grovel. Right. I'll see you Tuesday. Bye-bye.
Jerry puts the phone down and then picks it up again, Fielding lurking in the corridor outside. A phone rings in Fielding's study.
This is Fielding Chase. I can't come to the phone right now, but please leave your name and number.
Fielding, it's Jerry. You wanted me to call? Okay.
In the corridor.
Jerry! Oh, I'm sorry. I was outside when I heard the phone ring.
Yeah, so what's the deal, Fielding? I've been hanging around here alone for the last hour waiting to make this call.
I know. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, if you want to know the truth, I...
From the doorway, Fielding shoots Jerry in the back. Jerry falls to the floor, lying on his back.
Jerry! What happened? I thought I heard shots. Answer me! Jerry, are you all right?
Fielding slowly walks off down the corridor and puts his gun on a small wooden table in a den. He takes out some tissues, which he uses to wipe down the beige phone receiver, before replacing it in its cradle on the phone next to his gun. He picks up his revolver again, and wanders into the living room, kneeling down on the off-white carpet by Jerry's head and feeling his neck for a pulse. Satisfied, Fielding takes out a blue and white handkerchief from his pocket and wraps the revolver in it, and then rubs it in his hands to clean the gun. Having massaged his fingers around the gun's trigger guard, he throws out his hands. The gun flies out of the handkerchief and lands on the other side of the room. Fielding gets to his feet and beats a retreat out of the living room and back up the staircase, passing framed pictures and a couple of small red and black tapestries hung to the wood planking covered wall. Reaching the back door, he opens it, steps outside, and pulls it to, before carefully wiping the door handle, the lock, and part of the door frame with the handkerchief. He hurries back up the wooden steps and heads up a path, stopping beside a rose bush. He drops one end of the handkerchief onto the rose bush and tugs the other to make sure the fabric is caught in the thorns. Leaving the handkerchief in place, he dashes on up the path to the road and gets back into his Mercedes. Fielding drives away and dials a number on his cellular phone.
911 emergency.
I think a man has been shot.
Shot, sir?
I was talking to him on the phone, and then I heard the sound of shots, and then he didn't respond.
Take it easy, sir. To whom are you speaking?
His name is Jerry Winters. 986 Amethyst Road, the Palisades. I'm on my way there right now.
And what is your name, sir?
Fielding Chase, 24600 Cold Creek Road, Malibu.
We'll send a unit immediately.
Please hurry.
He puts down the phone and drives purposefully on. Fielding's car is parked outside the front of Jerry's house near police cars and a coroner's van. Fielding walks up the driveway and ducks under some yellow police tape towards a uniformed officer.
Officer, I'm well aware I'm being a pest, but you did say a homicide detective is on his way.
Yes, sir. Should have been here by now. You know, Mr. Chase, I'm not sure you really have to stick around. I mean, considering who you are and all, I could just give the lieutenant your name and number.
No, it's important that I talk to him personally.
Davis!
Excuse me.
The officer hurries towards the house. Fielding turns and heads back down the drive. A grey, battered 1950s Peugeot 403 convertible pulls to a stop by the coroner's van. Columbo, a small man with a squint and wiry greying hair, clambers out, wearing a crumpled beige mac over his white shirt and tie. Fiddling with the end of a cigar, he traipses up the driveway, passing Fielding, who doesn't give him a second look. Fielding gets back into his Mercedes. Sitting in the beige leather driver's seat, Fielding takes his black cell phone out of its cradle and dials a number. On the path near the front door, Columbo tries to light his cigar stub, but gives up and chucks it into a shrub as he walks towards the front door. He stops suddenly, turns back and searches around at the base of the shrub for the cigar end, which he picks up and puts into his Mac pocket. He steps through the front door into the living room.
There you are, Lieutenant.
Hey, Davis. What have we got?
White male named Gerald Winters, age 31, shot twice in the back, once in the head. Doc says he was probably dead when he hit the floor. Gun's over there.
I know this is a silly question, but I don't suppose we got a witness.
Funny you should ask.
Columbo gives him a half smile.
You're kidding.
Not an eyewitness, sir. An ear witness. Lieutenant?
Columbo follows Davis to the front door and looks out.
See the fellow in the Mercedes? His name is Fielding Chase. He's got a radio show. Maybe you heard it.
No, I don't think I have. No.
He was on the phone talking with the victim when the guy got shot.
No kidding.
Yes, sir.
You mean on that phone that he's got there?
No, sir. He was at his house in Malibu.
Oh.
Columbo nods and shuffles back inside.
You know, I'm thinking of getting me one of them.
What's that?
One of those, whatchamacallit phones like he got,
Cellular
phone, yeah. What do you think it costs?
Jeez, I don't know.
You know there's talk. Oh, I don't believe it. That you can get cancer from using them? You believe that?
Cancer? No.
Nah, I don't know. I'm gonna check with my cousin, Dominic, because wherever he goes, he got one of those things stuck in his ear. And I don't see no tumor growing under his brain. Yeah, at the beach and in his car. And with his stockbroker, all day long. Yuck. He says the phone made him a lot of money.
Have you got a stockbroker, Lieutenant?
Who, me? No, I'm lucky I got a savings account. No, I'm thinking of calling my wife.
He puts an imaginary phone to his ear.
Hello, it's me. Guess where I'm calling from? Wrong. The car.
Lieutenant, Mr. Chase, he's real anxious to talk to you.
Yeah, just let me look around here a minute.
An officer talks to cyclists near Fielding's car.
Thank you, we'll call you if we have to.
No, Arthur, I am not using Jerry's death, and I resent the implication.
Columbo comes over.
The man was an investigator in my employ, and there might be a connection. Would you mind? This is a very important call.
Oh, I didn't realize. Sorry. I'll just wait here, sir.
Arthur, do you want me to spell it out for you? Crack investigator. Killed under mysterious circumstances. What were the stories he was working on? Was he shot to keep him quiet? Oh, I don't know. Fielding Chase, outraged. Determined to see justice done. Good. Call me at home later. We'll talk about setting up a press conference.
Mr. Chase?
I'm sorry, I don't have time right now.
I'm from the police, sir. Lieutenant Columbo, homicide.
I'm terribly sorry, Lieutenant. This has been a dreadful experience for me. Did the officer inside tell you what happened?
Yes, sir. He told me that you and the victim were talking on the phone when he was shot.
Bizarre. I heard all these noises, shots. And I called out his name. No response. Nothing. As soon as I realized what had happened, I called 911 and I drove over here immediately. The police were here when I arrived.
When was that, sir?
I'm not sure exactly. About 4:30. Jerry called 4 o'clock. I live in the Malibu Mountains, about 30 minutes. It's about right.
Officer Davis tells me that you have some kind of a radio show.
It's a listener call-in show. Our topics are social, political. Jerry was my chief investigator.
I couldn't help overhearing that conversation you had with this fellow Arthur now, and I just wanted to ask you, do you really believe that Mr. Winters could have been killed by someone he was investigating?
Without question. I have powerful enemies out there.
Fielding gets out of his car.
Either that, or he was shot in the back by a jealous boyfriend.
A boyfriend?
Yes. Jerry was gay, Lieutenant. Not that his sexual orientation made any difference to me, but those people do have a reputation for unusual behavior.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't know, sir. You know, most of my experience has been with crazy husbands killing wives and crazy wives killing husbands.
Yes, I know what you mean. In the event that Jerry's death was related to his work, I have files at home. Why don't you come back with me and I'll turn them over to you. They could provide you with a lead.
Oh, well, that's very generous, really, sir, but I still have some work to do
no
here.
No problem. I'll wait right here.
You sure it's no bother?
Not at all. What matters most is bringing Jerry's killer to justice. Take whatever time you need.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
Columbo shuffles off up the drive.
Oh, one more thing, sir. Officer Davis tells me that you never actually went inside the house.
No, I wasn't permitted.
It's a little odd, sir, because just a second ago you said Mr. Winters had been shot in the back.
Yes.
I was wondering, just wondering, how you knew that, sir, when you hadn't seen the body.
I presume if Jerry saw someone standing in his house with a gun in his hand, he might have made some small mention of it to me while I was speaking with him.
Yeah, good point. You're absolutely right, sir. Excuse me. I'll just be a few moments.
Grinning broadly and with a wave and a nod back at Fielding, Columbo heads back to the house. Fielding drives up a long, gently curving concrete driveway, followed by Columbo in his battered grey Peugeot, Fielding's massive white mansion rising up from the gladed hillside in the distance. The two cars motor through an archway and into a grey brick-paved circular courtyard. The cars stop beside a couple of steps, leading up to a red stone patio area next to the main house.
Wow, this is some house, sir.
Yes, it took me nearly 4 years to build. You don't have a drip, do you?
Drip, sir?
An oil leak. I'm particular about the appearance of my driveway.
Oh, you mean my car? No, sir, she's fine. Tight as a drum. I just had it checked a month ago.
I'm relieved.
My feeling is you got a classic to take care of it. No, sir, you don't have to worry about that baby.
They go into Fielding's study, which is just off the entrance hall.
I have some material here in the desk.
The red light of the answering machine on the desk blinks.
Yes, here we are. Here's something we were doing on chemical wastes. Another payoffs to state legislators.
He hands Columbo a couple of loose-leaf folders. A dark blue BMW pulls up next to Fielding's Mercedes. Vicky climbs out and, in a state of distress, hurries between her car and her father's, dropping her keys. Tears in her eyes, she picks them up and races inside.
That's odd. I thought there was more material here at home.
Dad?
Fielding's taken aback.
My daughter. Victoria! In here!
She runs into his arms.
I just went back to Jerry. I knew.
I know. I just came back from there. This is Lieutenant Columbo of the Homicide Division. My daughter, Victoria.
Ma'am?
I was talking to him on the phone when it happened.
She stares at him, horrified.
Yeah. Victoria, there's a possibility that Jerry's death might be connected with the story that he was investigating. I'm turning over his files to the lieutenant.
We think there might be a lead here.
Well, I don't know about the two of you, but I certainly feel the need for a stiff drink, Victoria.
No, thank you.
Lieutenant?
On duty, sir.
Right, well, if you'll excuse me. Oh, Victoria, see if there are any messages, will you? I forgot to check the machine.
She walks over to the answering machine on the desk and pushes a button.
My condolences, ma'am. I gather you were close to the victim.
Yes, very.
You have 4 messages. First message, time 4:02 p.m.
Fielding. It's Jerry.
It's Jerry and Dad.
Okay.
That's the victim? Mr. Winters? That's him talking?
Yes.
Outside when I heard the phone ring.
Yeah, so what's the deal, Fielding? I've been hanging around here alone for the last hour waiting to make this call.
I know. I'm sorry.
Well, if you want to know the truth, I don't think...
Fielding runs in.
Jerry!
Oh, my God. Turn it off!
He slams his hand on the machine.
Oh, Tori, I'm so sorry. I completely forgot. I picked up Jerry's call just as the machine started to record.
She rushes out of the room.
Poor girl, I'm such an idiot.
Well, this is incredible, sir. We have the murder on tape.
I was outside when I heard the phone ringing. By the time I got inside, the machine had already started to record. Lieutenant, please forgive me. I must go be with my daughter.
Oh, I understand, sir. You realize I'm going to have to take the tape.
Yes, of course.
There might be something on here that will give us a lead to the killer. I don't know just what.
Lieutenant. I want this person, this fiend, brought to justice, no matter what it costs. I'm prepared to offer a substantial reward.
That's very generous of you, sir. It may not be necessary.
They go to the door.
If there's anything I can do, anything at all, I'm at your disposal 24 hours a day.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Once again, my deepest sympathies on your loss.
Thank you very much.
Fielding closes the door behind Columbo and takes a deep breath before heading...
Victoria.
It's open.
Fielding finds Vicky lying on her bed.
Victoria, I'm so sorry. You should never have had to hear that. I didn't realize until it was too late.
It's all right.
He sits beside her.
The person who did this, I promise you, I will see it, that he's brought to justice. However long it takes, however much it costs.
She gives him a pained look.
I know you have your heart set on leaving Tuesday. And if you still want to go, I won't try and stop you.
It's not important.
Well, of course it is. It's just that I'm as devastated as you are. I need you now more than ever.
She sits up, a little puzzled.
Dad, don't worry about it. I'll stay. The rest of it can keep.
She hugs him. In a chapel, Jerry lies in an open coffin, Vicky and a man staring down at him.
There are many ways you think a friend might die. This isn't one of them.
Ted, why don't we sit down?
Just give me a moment, please.
Other people stand around chatting in hushed tones or sit reflectively on the rows of white folding chairs. All the men are in sober suits, many sporting red ribbons on their lapels. Columbo comes into the back of the chapel. Vicky spots him and walks over.
Lieutenant?
Good evening, ma'am.
I didn't expect to see you here. Are you in the habit of attending the memorials for your victims?
Not as a rule, ma'am. Actually, this is in the line of duty. Is there some place we can talk?
Out there?
She points behind him.
That'll be fine.
Columbo and Vicky walk through the lobby area.
Ma'am, I thought maybe you could help me because, well, you and the victim were close friends and, well, I do have this problem.
What sort of problem, Lieutenant?
The house where Mr. Winters lived.
At the time of the murder, we ascertained that all the doors and all the windows were locked. No sign of forcible entry, which led me to believe that either he let his killer in, which is unlikely, or the killer had a key.
Yes?
Which would indicate a friend. A close friend. We checked the telephone records. And there were a great many calls to a Theodore Malloy.
Ted, yes, he and Jerry were close.
When you say close, ma'am...
I mean very close.
Yes, ma'am, I've been led to believe that. I just want to make sure we're talking about the same thing.
They were lovers, Lieutenant. Is that what you're trying to ask me?
Yes, ma'am. Something like that. This Mr. Malloy, would he have a key to Mr. Winter's home? Well, yes. I suppose he would.
Yes. I'm sure he does, Lieutenant.
Columbo writes in his notebook.
As a matter of fact, so do I.
You, ma'am? Really?
Yes. We would often work on stories together, sometimes at his home. Our relationship was professional, and he was a good friend.
Oh, I never thought anything else. This key of yours, ma'am, do you have it now?
Yes, it's in my purse. You know what's funny? When I arrived at the house yesterday after hearing about Jerry's death, I thought I'd lost it. It didn't seem to be on my keyring. But I guess I was just distraught.
So you do have the key?
Oh, yes, it was on my keyring this morning when I woke. I must have just overlooked it. As I said, my state of mind was not the best.
No, ma'am, I don't suppose it was. This Mr. Malloy, is he here now?
Yes, but it's not a very good time. Perhaps you could speak to him tomorrow at the studio.
Studio? Oh, you and your co-workers?
No, not the radio studio. Television. Ted is an actor on a daytime drama.
What's that? Is that like a soap opera?
Exactly. Women Who Love. Maybe you've heard of it.
No, ma'am, no, I haven't. Maybe my wife. She's crazy about those things. Ma'am, do you mind if I ask you where you were at the time of the shooting?
Why, am I under suspicion?
No, ma'am, nothing like that. But you do have a key. And I'm interested in anybody that's got a key.
Well, I spent the whole afternoon at the radio station prepping a program that we're doing this Wednesday evening with Senator Madison.
Senator? Wow. That's some kind of radio show.
Oh, yes. My father has heard every weeknight on 468 stations throughout the country.
And here I thought he was some kind of disc jockey or something. You know, to tell you the truth, I don't listen to the radio anymore. No, the music. I don't understand it. Prairie Como, Louis Armstrong, that I can understand. But these rock guys, they give me an earache.
She chuckles.
Well, thank you very much, ma'am. I won't trouble you anymore.
It's no trouble, Lieutenant.
Columbo pushes back the curtain screen of the room they've walked into and strolls out. A melancholy Vicky watches him and then heads back towards the chapel, passing Columbo, who's now sniffing flowers.
Oh, ma'am, just one other thing. Do you usually go into the radio station on weekends?
No, hardly ever. Except yesterday was a special circumstance.
Oh, so you decided to go in and just do some extra work?
No, my father decided.
Oh, so it was his idea that you work in the radio station during that afternoon?
Yes. Why, is that important?
No, ma'am, no. Not important at all. Thanks again.
She narrows her eyes and turns away. Another day on a dingy alley TV set.
All right, listen up, folks. We are running way behind. Let's go, let's go. Come on, people, stay alive. Bear with me. You, with the baseball cap. Come on, come on. Pay attention, please. We don't have a lot of time here. Let's go. Look alive, people.
Close the door, Preston.
All right, my homeless people. The rest of my homeless people.
Columbo enters.
Homeless people.
Excuse me, miss. I'm looking
over
for...
Over there.
Over there? No, I'm looking
over
for...
Over there, and please hurry. You're late.
I'm late?
He wanders off. On set.
Okay, let's go, folks. You over there on the box. You two sitting down. You out of the way. All right, now Jennifer Chambers is going to be entering the alley from this direction. She's going to be wearing a silk evening gown. There's going to be a bloody bruise on her head. She is going to seem dazed and disoriented. And I want you to notice her, but for heaven's sake, folks, please don't try to act.
Preston, are we ready yet?
Yes, sir. Ready right away. I need another homeless person for this wall. You'll do fine. Stand by the wall, please.
You talking to me, sir?
Yes, that's right. That wall over there. Thank you. Nice shoes. I like the touch. Roll tape!
I think there's some kind of a mistake, sir. I'm from the,
He searches his pockets.
Okay, here we go.
A dazed blonde in a silver dress overacts her way down the alley. Two men watch her on monitor screens in a gallery.
Okay, good.
Good, good.
Here it is.
What the hell was that?
The other man shrugs as the woman collapses and Columbo comes into shot.
Who the hell is that? Who the hell is that?
I'm from the police, so...
Oh, no!
Cut!
Here we are.
What the hell do you think you're doing? Eric, believe it or not,
Jennifer,
I'm trying to act here and
Jennifer,
this clown is...
handle this.
You're fired.
I'm
drop gonna... off your voucher. You ruined the shot.
Another one of your relatives arrested
me? I'm from the police, folks. I tried to explain that...
You're a policeman?
Yes, ma'am.
He's a cop!
Jennifer Chambers, this is bizarre. Eric, is he the police?
Who are you looking for?
Ted Malone. He's looking for Ted.
Go to Ted.
Over there? Yes. Okay. Sorry.
The man in the gallery window waves his arms.
I'm awfully sorry, yes. My wife is a great fan of yours.
Oh, thank you. What's Ted done?
Columbo holds up his hands.
Let's go.
All right, folks, let's go. Back to one now.
I need another bum for this wall. Let's go.
Columbo finds Ted, who's in his late 20s, in makeup.
Mr. Malloy?
Yes.
Lieutenant Columbo, LAPD.
Oh, yes. Victoria told me that you stopped by the funeral home last evening, Lieutenant. How may I help you?
Is it all right when we talk here?
Yes.
Because I don't want to bother anybody. It's all right?
Feel free.
Good. I just want to ask you a few questions. I know you're busy.
Yes?
You recognize this?
No.
The handkerchief.
Take a good look.
No.
These brown stains. They mean anything to you?
Frowning, Ted takes the blue and white handkerchief, unfolds it, and sniffs it.
Oh, yes, this is dried pancake makeup.
Yes, sir. We found this handkerchief snagged on a rose bush in back of Mr. Winter's home. And we think it was left there by the killer.
Oh, I see. Theatrical makeup, so you assume...
Oh, sir, no, I don't assume anything. We also found minute traces of this makeup on the gun that killed Mr. Winters. Also on the rear doorknob.
Lieutenant, I didn't kill him.
It is my understanding, sir, that you and the victim had a falling out?
No. We started seeing each other around 9 days ago. But we knew that was temporary at best. And when he called to tell me that he was going to New York... I was upset.
Did Mr. Winters have other friends that were actors?
Friends, no. Acquaintances, perhaps.
Just for the record, sir, where were you Saturday at 4 o'clock?
He rubs his right eye.
Well, normally I would be home alone, working. I'm in the middle of remodeling my home. But this past Saturday, I was downtown at a department store.
Do you have anybody that can vouch for that, sir?
Oh, yes, I would say about a couple of hundred people, to say the least. See, at the last moment, I was joined by two other cast members, and the three of us were there from 3 until 5, signing autographs. Does that cover it, Lieutenant?
Yes, sir. That covers it just fine.
He wanders off.
That's it. That's a wrap. Homeless, go home. Turn in your vouchers.
In a restaurant, Fielding's with a young blonde and an older man.
Well, of course I told them I wasn't interested. I mean, I had been taking off my clothes in 6 straight pictures, and we had decided it was time to exhibit myself as an actress, not some piece of meat. So anyway, rather than lose me, they just rewrote the scene.
It's a sensational film, Fielding.
Oh, I'm sure it is, and I'm sure it'll give a boost to your career, Miss Ross. Which brings me to the topic of our lunch.
She sits forwards.
I've asked you to join me. To confirm the fact that several years ago you had an affair with Senator Gordon Madison.
What?
No way, never happened.
Certainly not.
I'm disappointed at your lack of candor, my dear. I have in my possession a birth certificate which proves that 7 years ago, back east, you secretly gave birth to a child out of wedlock.
Oh, now, wait a minute.
After which, you immediately put the child, a daughter, up for adoption.
What the hell is going on here,
Dee
Dee?
My question, is the child Senator Madison's?
No.
Oh, really? I have 2 eyewitnesses who will swear that Senator Madison visited you not once, but several times during your confinement at St. Anne's home.
Yes, that's true. I'm sorry, Howard, I should have told you, but it was 7 years ago, for God's sake.
You were 17 at the time, legally a minor.
Look. The baby was not the senator's. My mother worked for him as a housekeeper. When he found out what happened, he offered to help because that's just the kind of guy he is. He paid a few bills and helped find a home for the baby.
I see.
It's the truth. The baby's father was a boy I knew in school. Neither one of us was ready for marriage.
He eyes her steadily.
Look, I know this is news. But does it have to come out? I mean, I made a mistake. But don't screw up the rest of my life.
It's hardly my intention, my dear. The purpose of our lunch was to get the facts. Now that I have them, you have nothing to fear.
It's very decent of you, Fielding.
Not at all, Howard. Now, may I suggest you get Miss Ross out of here before she attracts any more attention to herself than she already has.
You bet. Come on, kid, let's go get you cleaned up. And Edie, say thank you to the man.
She turns petulantly to Fielding.
Thanks.
Who nods with a thin smile.
Waiter, more coffee.
Yes, sir.
Fielding picks up his mobile phone and dials a number.
Collier, I've just confirmed the story. It's as I suspected. You call in at 8:45 on the back line. Victoria will patch you through immediately. And if we need to chat any further, I'll call you.
Examining his nails, Columbo traipses in and looks around. He spots Fielding and gives him a cheery wave. Fielding gives a little wave of his fingers and then motions Columbo over. The uppity-looking maitre d' chases after Columbo.
Excuse me, sir, but may I help you?
I don't think so, but thanks anyway. How are you, Mr. Chase?
Well, thank you, Lieutenant. Please join me, Fritz.
The maitre d' moves the table for Columbo to sit down.
Thank you very much.
Say hello to Lieutenant Columbo of the Los Angeles Police Department, Fritz.
Delighted to meet you, Lieutenant.
It's nice meeting you, sir.
Would you care to join me in some coffee?
No, thank you.
Dessert, perhaps?
No, I'm fine. Well, actually, could I have a cup of tea with honey? Would that be too much trouble?
Not at all, Lieutenant.
Thank you very much. Got a little tickle in my throat, got a cold coming on. You know how it is this time of the year. My wife's been playing nursemaid to me. She's been filling me with tea and honey for a week now.
Do you feel any better?
No, sir, but I don't feel worse. My wife, she likes to play nursemaid. It makes her happy. And when she's happy, I'm happy.
Well, Lieutenant, what can I do for you?
He nods at Fielding's phone.
How do you like that thing, sir?
What?
The phone? I'm thinking of buying one.
Indispensable.
Really? Have you heard, you know, there's people that are saying that you can get cancer from those things, the radiation in your ear.
Ridiculous.
It is, huh? It's just that my wife saw this guy on television. He said he grew a tumor.
One is liable to hear almost anything on television these days, Lieutenant. None of it necessarily true.
So you don't worry about it. There's nothing to worry about.
Can we get down to business?
Oh, absolutely, sir. But first, I got to apologize. You know, when I first met you that day, I had no idea. I mean, I found this in a barbershop, and when I saw your picture that day, you could have knocked me over with a ping pong ball. How many people listen to you every night? 10 million? 12 million? It's fantastic.
Thank you.
And you know, when I told my wife that I met you, she says, you know who listens to this guy every night? Your cousin Dominic. She says, Dominic, he never misses your show. Not for a Dodger game, not even for the Lakers.
Very flattered.
Sir, I wonder, would you be so kind as to sign this to Dominic? Just to Dominic, nothing fancy.
He hands the Economic Weekly magazine to Fielding.
And then put your name.
Fielding writes underneath his picture on the front.
Here, get it, kid, get it, this. Dominic, you don't have much of a life.
And now, can we get to the point, if there is one?
Yes, sir. It's about the tape on your answering machine. We listened to that over and over. There's nothing there. There's no kind of clue.
Too bad.
Yeah. You can hear the killer approach the body and hesitate, probably to check if it was dead. And you can just make out him leaving through the back door. So we figure that's how he came in and out, through the back.
Makes sense. A shrewd killer would hardly park his car out front, prance through the front door, where anyone could see him.
Right. Oh, and by the way, we found the handkerchief.
What handkerchief?
Fritz arrives with a tray.
Your tea, sir? Oh, thank you very much.
A cup of tea and a pot of honey.
Smells terrific. Yeah, there was this handkerchief out back. It was stuck in a rose bush. Stained with theatrical makeup. And we found traces of the same makeup on the gun handle and the rear doorknob.
Yes, I heard that Jerry was involved with an actor.
Oh, is that what you think, sir? That he was killed by an actor?
Well, it's a natural conclusion. A lover spat. These things happen.
Well, this particular actor,
He takes the lid off the honey.
What's his name?
He takes a honey dipper out of the jar and stares at it while the honey pours off it.
Twist it.
He does so.
Oh, there you go.
And holds its wooden discs over his teeth.
It is, never saw that before.
Why, never mind.
Yeah. This particular actor, yes, Mr. Malloy. We cleared him, sir.
Fielding's impassive.
Did you?
He got a rock-solid alibi.
Lucky fellow.
Unless, of course, he hired somebody to do it, which, that's something that a really clever killer might do. Establish an unshakable alibi for himself while somebody else does the dirty work.
He picks up his cup.
Oh, this is hot. And that's just the way I like it. And anything I can't stand is lukewarm tea. Anyway, sir, can you think of somebody else who might have had a motive to kill Mr. Winters? Besides yourself, of course.
What the hell are you talking about?
The hotel the other day. You threatened the victim, sir, in front of a dozen witnesses.
Oh, I see. Yes. I lose my temper and say something silly, and a gaggle of tourists take me at face value. Really, Lieutenant, you can't be serious. I have a short temper. I must have fired and hired Jerry Winters a dozen times in the past few years.
Well, if you say so, sir, but I gotta tell you, it's a lucky thing for you you were on the phone with the guy when he got killed. I mean, another homicide detective could have taken that threat to heart.
Well, I hate to cut this short, but I'm due back at the radio station. Please, you finish your tea, and if there's anything else, don't hesitate.
I won't, and thank you very much. Tea's terrific. I'm feeling better already.
Fielding walks out of the front of the building. His car's brought round.
Mr. Chase!
In my car, please.
Excuse me, sir! Just one more thing, sir.
And what would that be?
It's about the files. Mr. Winter's files.
Yes.
I was talking to your daughter, sir, and she told me that most of his files were back at the office and not at your house.
So?
Just curious, sir, if that's true, why you took me back to your house and not the radio station?
Lieutenant, it's true that most of the complete files are back at the radio station. But I knew that my daughter was working there at that time. And forgive me if this sounds cowardly, but I didn't want to be the one to have to tell her what had happened. There's nothing more. You'll excuse me.
Certainly, sir. Sorry to bother you. Thank you. And thanks again for the tea.
The top of his car down, Fielding drives away. Columbo pensively presses his left hand to his mouth. Vicky walks slowly through an art gallery, passing a set of three silhouettes of a person, each one with more gunshot holes around it. She studies a mirrored sculpture like a fat icicle with one straight side. Lou walks up to her.
Excuse me, Miss Chase.
Yes?
I'm Lou Caton.
Oh, yes.
Now, since I haven't been able to get through to you on the phone, I flew out here this morning. Your receptionist told me where I could find you.
But, Mr. Caton,
I'm sorry about Jerry. He was a wonderful friend to both of us.
Yes, he was.
Well, I'm sure he told you how much I admire your novel.
Yes, and I'm very flattered. Thank you.
Yeah, well, what's more, I'd like to represent you.
But I was told my book was rejected.
It was, by the man I used to work for. I quit this morning.
Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Caton. You've taken a long trip for nothing. Right now, I can't think of anything except helping my father through some difficult times. Besides, he's promised to find me a publisher.
You can't be serious. Fielding Chase was the man who had your book sabotaged at my agency. Didn't Jerry tell you this?
That is a monstrous accusation, Mr. Caton. Please, just leave me alone.
No, Miss Chase, I'm sorry. Look, Miss Chase?
Fielding's on his phone.
Yes, Warren. I'll be sending you the manuscript of my daughter's novel early next week.
He's in his office.
No, my friend. You're under no obligation to like it, even though it is quite good. In fact, if you could find it in your heart to despise it, I would be very grateful. Well, Warren, I have plans for my daughter which do not include her traipsing off to God knows where like some latter-day Gertrude Stein. And as New York's preeminent publisher, your rejection, kindly but firmly couched, might dissuade her from pursuing this fantasy. And for your help, I would be eternally grateful. Well, thank you, Warren. Pleasure chatting with you, as always. Expect the manuscript sometime next week.
Dad, what is this?
A newsletter.
This week's issue of the news report, I expect.
You know what I'm talking about. The item at the bottom of the first page. Ambassador Hendricks and the drug cartel. You know it isn't true.
Do I?
Research checked this out with three different sources. These allegations are completely unsubstantiated.
Unsubstantiated, maybe, but true or false, the story has merit.
You can't do this.
Victoria, we're in a war with these people. The only way to beat them is to attack and expose. Attack and expose. I'll leave the pussyfooting to the politicians.
My name is on the masthead as associate editor. I can't be a party to this. Sorry.
She marches out.
Victoria. Victoria, wait. Victoria! I'm sorry. You're absolutely right.
Does that mean the item's out?
Until I can have it reinvestigated. Satisfactory?
I suppose so.
Can we have a smile?
She smiles thinly.
Make a smile. Come on. Find something to replace the item. We go to press at midnight.
I'll see what we have.
She takes the copy of the Chase report. At the radio station, a whistling Columbo is examining files spread out all over a table in an office. A cigar burns in the saucer of a coffee cup. Fielding stops outside the door and stares in.
Oh, hello, Mr. Chase.
Lieutenant.
Just going over Mr. Winder's case files. Your daughter said it was all right.
And have you come up with anything?
Not much, sir, no. Well, that's not exactly true. There is one thing that bothers me.
Fielding steps into the room.
You burning ragweed in here, or did somebody die?
Oh, excuse me, sir. That'd be my cigar. Let me get rid of that. Yeah, it's a filthy habit. I should have given it up a long time ago.
Fielding points to a bin.
You know, even my wife's been yelling at me. The other night, she put me out in the porch.
He puts the cigar in the bin.
No gun.
Beg pardon, sir?
No gun. You're a character. I'll have to remember that.
Oh, thank you, sir. Yes, sir.
You mentioned there was one thing.
Right, sir, and it was nothing that I found. It was something that I didn't find.
He goes to a window and wrestles with a Roman blind.
What are you doing?
Well, I'm trying to get the smell out, sir.
The windows don't open. Forget the smell. What was the one thing you didn't find?
Well, sir, did you know that in all these file folders, all 33, there's only one that has anything to do with an actor, actually an actress. Goes by the name of
Deidre Ross. I'm familiar with Jerry's workload. What's your point?
My point, sir, is because of the handkerchief. You remember the handkerchief?
Yes, I remember.
It had a theatrical makeup on it?
Yes, I remember.
And there were traces of this makeup on the gun.
And on the door handle. Yes, I remember.
Exactly. So my point is...
Columbo freezes.
Is that... Oh, my goodness. Smoke, sir.
A plume of smoke rises from the bin.
Smoke?
He picks up his coffee cup.
I just put a little coffee on it.
He empties a little coffee into the bin.
Where was I? Oh, yes. My point. My point, sir, is that the presence of the handkerchief rules out everybody in the files. All 33 people.
What a sweeping statement.
Well, sir, I thought...
The bin's still smoking.
Like everyone else, that the handkerchief was used to wipe off the prints.
He fans the door open and shut.
None of those people in the file, sir. None of them used theatrical makeup. So there's no reason for it to be there. Why was it there? There's no explanations for it being there unless someone planted it deliberately to point us at the actor.
I never thought of that.
Well, why would you? I mean, you wouldn't.
But why would that rule out all the people in the file? All 33 of them.
I just don't know, sir, how people like this, politicians in Washington, Wall Street brokers, how would these people know that 9 days ago, Jerry and Ted started a gay relationship? I mean, those fellows, they were very discreet.
I see. You're right, of course. The killer would have to be someone who knew Jerry personally.
There you go, sir. That's the ticket.
Well, I wish I could help you. But, quite frankly, I knew very little about Jerry outside of the office. Our relationship was strictly business.
But you were at his house.
You're mistaken.
I don't think so, sir. No, I don't think so. Yeah, here it is.
A piece of paper.
April 2nd, birthday party for the deceased, Sunday afternoon. Photo, you and your daughter around the cake.
Oh, I've been to his house. I thought you meant recently.
Oh, did I get that impression, sir? I'm sorry. But you were in his house for that birthday party.
Oh, yes. And a dull and dreary affair it was. If there's nothing more.
Not a thing, sir. You go right ahead. I'll just gather up these files and return them to your daughter.
Fielding goes out.
Oh, Mr. Chase. There is, sir, just one more thing.
With you, Lieutenant, there's always just one more thing. Do you have a problem with short-term memory? Perhaps you should consult a physician.
Maybe we could discuss this privately in your office.
I don't have the time.
He turns.
Sir, I'm having trouble with the phone call.
Fielding looks back, startled, and then smiles.
5 minutes. But only five.
Columbo follows Fielding into his office and shuts the door.
Here's the thing, sir. We check phone records as a matter of routine. For example, Mr. Winters, he called the radio station a lot, obviously. Also, Mr. Malloy, also Mr. Luke Caton, literary agent. Oh, and by the way, I spoke to him briefly. He says that he's interested in representing a book written by your daughter.
Would you get to the point?
Sorry, sir. Well, we not only checked out Mr. Winters' phone, sir, we checked out yours.
Mine?
Your house in the mountains out in Malibu. And here's my problem, sir. You said that you spoke with Mr. Winters and that you heard shots. And then when he didn't answer, you called 911. Then you got in your car and you drove to Mr. Winters' house. Well, sir, that's not true.
Fielding raises his eyebrows.
The phone company has no record of your having made a 911 call from your house.
Is that it? Is that your problem? Good Lord, Lieutenant, you waste more time worrying about minutiae.
Sir, I don't think it's minutiae.
I never said I made the call from the house.
Columbo cocks his head as he flips through his notebook.
Are you sure about
Absolutely.
That?
Absolutely. I was so distraught with what I heard that I rushed out to the car to drive to Jerry's. It was only when I was actually on the road that I had the presence of mind to notify the police. I called 911 from the car phone.
From the car? Well, there you go, sir. That explains it.
If that is finally it.
And that explains the other thing.
What other thing?
The time, sir. I've really been troubled by the time.
What the hell are you talking about?
Well, sir, you have one of those computer voice time codes on your answering machine. And when I played back the tape, I was able to place the time of the shots at exactly 4:02.
Yes, Jerry called me precisely at 4 o'clock.
And 911 has a record of receiving your call at 4:06. And I'm thinking all day, what did you do during those 4 minutes? I mean, 4 minutes is a long time. But yes, now I see what happened. You heard the shots, then you ran from the house, you got in your car, you started the car down the road.
And then when I had a chance to think more clearly, I called police emergency.
You don't know how glad I am to have this explained to me. I was beginning to think I was going out of my mind.
Fielding opens the door.
Well, sir, I don't want to take any more of your time. I know you're busy, but I do want to thank you. Thank you very much.
Columbo steps out. Fielding shuts the door and blots his moustache with a handkerchief. A sunny morning, Columbo drives up to the closed wooden gates at the entrance to Fielding's estate. He leans out of his window and presses an intercom button. Fielding walks down a path outside.
Martha! Martha!
A maid appears on a balcony.
Good morning, Mr. Chase.
Good morning. My daughter up yet? I'd like to talk to her.
Oh, she left, sir, just as I was arriving. She said she had some work to catch up on at the office.
So early?
Would you like some breakfast, sir?
No, later.
What's that, sir? Is that smoke?
Fielding frowns as he turns to look at the entrance gates.
Mr. Chase!
Columbo has scaled them.
Mr. Chase!
Well, 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 the ubiquitous Lieutenant Columbo. It was only 8:47.
Martha, a funny little man from the police department is going to make an appearance.
It's me! Lieutenant
I'll be
Columbo.
In the exercise room.
I'm at the gate! Didn't open!
Columbo waves.
Thank you very much!
Sorry for the trouble.
Columbo climbs off the gate onto the bonnet of his car. Martha opens the door.
Good morning, ma'am, Lieutenant Columbo. I'm here to see Mr. Chase.
Come in. He's expecting you. May I take your coat, sir?
No, that's all right. I don't think I want to stay long. Your name is...
Martha, sir.
Martha. I was here on Saturday. I didn't see you, Martha.
I work only weekdays, sir. Mr. Chase and his daughter prefer their privacy on weekends. This way, sir.
Carefully holding his cigar over his hand, a long, unsteady stick of ash at its end, Columbo follows Martha into the rambling house. Fielding's sitting astride a cycling machine in an exercise room which is in a building near the bottom of the hill. A large screen TV is on in the corner.
Stay tuned for the news at noon on WLBD Channel 6 following this public service announcement.
Columbo's now in a hillside tram car making its steady way down to the lower buildings. He spots Fielding and waves madly. Fielding ignores him and climbs on a rowing machine. Columbo appears on the patio.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Lieutenant.
I hope I'm not intruding.
As a matter of fact, you are. It's the time of day. I work on my muscle tone as well as catch up on the news of the day. I have a very important broadcast this evening.
Yeah, right, sir. The Senator. I'll try and make this brief. Just let me get rid of this.
Don't bother with the cigar, Lieutenant. It's quite...
Just take a second, sir.
News at noon.
Columbo stubs out his cigar.
Am I going crazy? Did he say noon?
He checks his watch.
It's just 9 o'clock.
That's the East Coast feed.
Sir?
The satellite dish is picking up an East Coast station.
Satellite?
Yes, Lieutenant. Cable TV hasn't yet reached into this wilderness. Because of the mountains, we can't get a decent picture from normal television signal. Consequently, most of us out here have a satellite dish.
Satellite? You know I've heard about those. A fellow told me, true, you can get maybe 100 channels on this.
Try 200. You said something about brevity, Lieutenant.
Oh, yes, sir. Would it be possible, sir, to turn down the TV? This is kind of important.
Sighing, Fielding gets up from the machine.
The interest of getting things going.
Fielding gets on a weightlifting machine.
I'm having a problem, sir, with the key.
The key? What key?
It is my belief that whoever killed Mr. Winters let himself in unobserved with a key through the back door, but when we started checking around, there weren't that many people with the keys. I mean, he didn't,
Perhaps there was no key. Perhaps the killer was already in the house, having been let in earlier by Jerry.
On the tape. The victim very clearly states that he was alone.
All right, there was a key. What's that got to do with me?
You, sir? Nothing. But it may have a lot to do with your daughter.
Fielding stops exercising, gets up from the machine's bench, and steps towards Columbo with a worried glare.
What about her?
We've been able to identify only 4 people, sir, that had keys to Mr. Winter's apartment, and all 4 have unshakable alibis, all except your daughter.
My daughter was working that afternoon at the radio station.
Not exactly, sir. She was working in your offices in the building, working alone. Very frankly, I can't find anybody who can verify her whereabouts at the time of the shots.
This is ridiculous.
She could have easily come and gone undetected. I mean, I can see the scenario, sir. She makes up some kind of an excuse about having to work in the offices.
Lieutenant, you're a fool. Not only is your notion preposterous, but it was my idea that my daughter spend the afternoon at the office.
Your idea?
My idea. And I can assure you, my daughter did not kill anyone.
With a stony glance at Columbo, Fielding strides out of the room onto the sun-drenched patio. Columbo raises his eyebrows, his one good eye darting up to the ceiling as he thinks. Fielding marches towards the hillside tramway. Columbo catches up with him.
One more thing, sir. Just a little confused, small thing. You keep calling her your daughter, but actually, sir, I understand that that is not exactly true.
They're on the tramway.
But she is my daughter, Lieutenant. Perhaps not biologically, but in every other sense. I took her into my home when she was 10, and I raised her as my own.
Wow, that was Very generous thing to do, sir.
Generous? Selfish? I wonder. Many years ago, when I was a very young man, I was very much in love with Victoria's mother. Stupidly, I let her walk out of my life. And she married another man. I kept track of her through the years, and when her husband died, I went to see her. I don't know what I expected, perhaps to rekindle the flame that had never died. But I was too late. She told me she had cancer, inoperable, only months to live.
Columbo stares at the floor and blows out his cheeks.
I promised her that I would raise Victoria as my own. And I kept that vow, Lieutenant. I love that child as if she were my own flesh and blood.
Well, I understand your depth of feeling, sir, and I'm going back to that station and try my best to find somebody who can clear her name.
You haven't heard me, Lieutenant. Her name doesn't need clearing. She's innocent. If you insist on pursuing this lunacy, you'll indeed be a very unhappy policeman.
Sir, I'm just trying to do my job.
Then do it away from me and my daughter.
Sir, I can be wrong. I realize that.
The light is dawning. How encouraging.
They reach the top of the tramway.
Yes, sir. Now I recall, she said to me at one point that she temporarily lost her key.
Well, there you are. You see?
Unfortunately, sir, that was the afternoon of the murder. That was a Saturday when she drove up to the house, and she thought that the key was gone from her key ring, but it turned up the next morning, which, of course, doesn't make any sense, because the only people in the house at that time were her and you.
Fielding's face hardens.
Is that some sort of accusation?
No, I think she probably overlooked the key in the first place, and it must have been there the whole time. Wouldn't you think?
Goodbye, Lieutenant. Can you find your own way out? Good.
He turns away and then looks back.
You'll forgive me if I don't wish you a very pleasant day.
He marches off. Columbo sighs. In Fielding's studio...
This is Beth from Carson City, Nevada.
I have a question for Senator Madison.
Go ahead, you're on the air.
Okay, I was just wondering how you think you're going to get reelected, Senator. I mean, considering your votes on ERA, it's like you don't even know or don't care.
Of course I care, Beth, but I don't support any measure which legislates benefits to one particular group, whether they be male, female, black, Hispanic, or whatever, at the expense of any other group.
Thank you, Senator Madison, and thank you, Beth, for your call. Local news next. This is Fielding Chase here with Senator Gordon Madison, back in five.
Fielding gets up.
Yes.
Thank you.
Fielding goes out. The senator's joined by his PA. Fielding goes into Vicky's production booth.
What do you think?
You've been pulling your punches.
Calm before the storm. In a few minutes, a call will come in on the back line. Man named Collier. Patch him through and put him at the top of the list.
Wait a minute, Dad. These are supposed to be random calls. This isn't fair.
Stop acting like a child. These things are done all the time. Right about now, this program needs a jolt, and Collier is going to supply it.
Dad?
Don't argue, Victoria. Just do it.
She hurries after him. In the reception area, lift doors open, and Columbo, looking like a disheveled janitor, ambles out. Fielding's with a man in another production booth.
I want you to take each one of these tapes and re...
Excuse me, sir. I'm glad I...
Go away, Columbo.
Sir, if I could have just 1 minute?
I don't have a minute.
I just want to apologize, sir. I had a bad afternoon, a very bad afternoon. After you called the mayor called the commissioner called my captain, and I was on the carpet for an hour.
I told you this morning, and I'm telling you now, stay out of my life.
I just want you to know how badly I feel. I mean, if I had known that I was bothered...
You were, and you are. Now, please leave before I call security and have you removed.
Fielding goes into the studio. Vicky joins Columbo.
My father's been under a great deal of strain the past few days, Lieutenant. He hasn't been himself. But I think you should leave.
Columbo shrugs.
We're back in 20 seconds.
With a nod, Columbo wanders out of the booth and comes across the senator's PA in the corridor.
The senator, how's he doing?
He's holding his own. Night's young yet.
And five, four, three, two...
And we're back for another hour with Senator Gordon Madison, who by his own admission faces stiff opposition in his re-election bid this year. Senator, thank you for joining us on National Focus this evening.
My pleasure, Fielding. I am delighted to have the opportunity to reach out to your many listeners, many of whom share my philosophy, I am sure.
And many of them who don't.
Vicky answers the phone.
You may make some converts, but my yes? people are a hard-headed lot.
Yes, I was told you'd be calling.
Take kindly.
Please hold.
Goosekins.
Well, I'd say they get precious little of that around here.
Amen to that, my friend. And now back to the phones. This is Collier from Roanoke, Virginia.
Mr. Chase?
This is he. You're on the air with Senator Gordon Madison.
Look, I gotta tell you, I'm not a real big fan of yours, Mr. Chase.
Oh, thank you very much. And what else do you have to say besides displaying your ignorance?
But that guy you got with you, that senator, he's a real piece of work. Hey, Senator.
Yes, I'm here.
When you gonna tell the world about that little adventure you had a few years back with, what's her name at a movie star? Deidre Ross.
What?
Come on, man. Everybody knows she had your kid, then put it up for adoption. When was that? About, 7 years ago or so? Not really sure.
Sir, this is a very serious allegation.
St. Anne's Home for Unwed Mothers, just across the state line. And don't tell me you don't know about it. Hell, man, I got witnesses.
Look, this is absolutely untrue. I can explain about this.
Explain? What are you saying, Senator? You know this woman, this actress?
Well, yes, I knew her, but I...
Sir, this is a very grave accusation. You say you have proof? What kind of proof?
Medical records, adoption papers, eyewitnesses.
Look, this is total nonsense. I knew Miss Ross, of course. Her mother worked for me.
She was only 17, man. 17. You ask me, a guy like you ought to be strung up. Mr. Chase, I don't even understand why you have a low life like this on your program.
Fielding's eyes shine with satisfaction. Later, Fielding drives his Mercedes, the roof down, into the courtyard outside the main building of his rambling mansion. He gets out and goes inside. He walks up some stairs, shadows of palm plants thrown onto the white wall. He approaches Vicky's closed bedroom door.
Victoria!
Go away.
I have to talk to you.
I said go away.
Please open the door.
Leave me alone.
Victoria!
Leave me alone. Please, just leave me alone.
Fielding turns away from the door, troubled. Day, a large black limousine pulls up outside the pale green-painted wooden gates at the entrance to Fielding's estate. The driver presses the intercom button. Asleep in an armchair in his study, a glass of whiskey beside him, Fielding wakes with a start. He gets unsteadily up. His tie loose around his crumpled, open-necked shirt, he trudges over to the window and looks out, to see the limo cruising up the driveway. His eyes widen in realization, and he hurries out.
Victoria?
She's coming down the stairs carrying suitcases.
Victoria? Where are you going? Who is that out there?
His name is Lewis Caton. He's a literary agent, and I'm flying with him to New York.
About last night, I'm sorry.
So am I. Look, I don't want to fight with you. One of us might say something we might regret, so why don't we just say that I'm going off on my own and I'm going to try to make it as a writer.
I want to help you. I told you that.
Yes, well, you've told me a lot of things, and I believe too many of them.
Victoria, you're not leaving. I won't permit it.
You won't permit it?
Poor choice of words. I'm sorry.
You know, I finally realized that Jerry was right, but I was too frightened or loyal or maybe even too stupid to listen to him.
She goes out.
If I don't leave now, I'm never going to get away.
Victoria, wait. Don't leave me. I need you.
No, Dad, you don't need me. You don't need anybody except yourself. You know, never mind how you hurt me. What you did to Senator Madison last night was unforgivable. You smeared an innocent man with a despicable lie.
Victoria, you don't understand.
Oh, yes, I do, all too well. I'll call you from New York.
This is your fault. You poisoned her against me.
No, Dad.
I'll destroy you, Caton. I swear to God I will.
You'll try, Mr. Chase, but I'll take my chances.
They get into the car.
Victoria.
The car drives off. Fielding stands on the brick-paved courtyard, staring at the departing vehicle. He heads in, curling his fingers agitatedly. He stops in his tracks and looks through a fireplace which opens onto two adjoining rooms.
What are you doing in here?
Oh, good morning, sir.
Fielding's open-mouthed.
How did you get in here?
A portrait's on one wall.
Through the patio, sir. Mr. Caton drove me up this morning. My own car is laid up in the shop. You know, sir, I can see the resemblance. Beautiful woman, that lady. And warm, too. You can see it in the eyes.
You were told to stay away from me, Columbo.
That I was, sir, but unfortunately, in a murder investigation, you have to go where the trail leads you to.
Well, the trail leads here.
Yes, sir, I'm afraid it does.
Perhaps if you were to speak directly to your chief of police.
I'll talk to him, sir, but that's not going to change the fact that you killed Mr. Winters to prevent him from running off with your daughter.
Victoria running off with Jerry Winters? I hardly think so. Fielding Chase, put me through
the chief. I don't mean in a romantic sense, sir. He was helping her escape from you. We have a witness.
What witness?
A man who says you offered him $10,000 to kill Jerry Winters.
Arab nonsense.
I don't think so, sir. This guy, he sounds very credible.
Lieutenant, do you have any idea how many enemies I have out there? People who would do anything, say anything to bring me down? Where is this person?
He's down at headquarters.
Well, suppose we just see about this.
He slams down the phone.
I'll confront your witness. And when I do, I'll destroy him. And after that, I'll start on you. And then maybe the rest of the Los Angeles Police Department. Let's go.
You don't mind driving?
Looking forward to it.
They drive in the open-topped Mercedes.
You know, Lieutenant, for the first time, I'm beginning to appreciate what some of my listeners call police harassment. It's an ugly experience.
Sir, it was never my intention.
Oh, save it, Lieutenant. That routine of yours is becoming tiresome.
Ahead, some cyclists are standing in the road.
Looks like some kind of an accident, sir.
Slow down, man. Hey. Slow down. Get somebody down here, man. We need some help.
Fielding stops the car and Columbo gets out.
What happened here? Somebody get hurt?
A coyote ran across the road and Wally fell.
A young man's lying in the road.
It's my leg. I think it's all right. I'm not sure.
Well, let me take a look at it.
Fielding comes over.
That doesn't look like there's a break. What do you think?
I don't know.
Another cyclist crawls under the car.
Have you tried putting any pressure on it?
Not yet.
Maybe you ought to try standing and see.
Yeah.
The young man is helped up.
I'm all right.
Feel all right?
Yeah, it's fine. That's fine. Yeah. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Okay. That's fine. Yeah. Thanks a lot.
Oh, no problem.
Fielding returns to his car and tries to start it.
Is it a problem, sir?
Obviously.
The cyclists head off. Columbo returns to the car.
Maybe the battery.
Lights work.
Why'd you pop the hood? Let me take a look.
You a mechanic, Columbo?
No, sir, but whenever I have a problem, I start pushing those wires around, and sometimes, you never know, it works like a charm.
You push wires around in your car, mine you will leave alone.
Yes, sir. So, well, what do you want to do? You want to call AAA?
Wonderful idea.
Fielding dials a number on his cell phone. Columbo pats the bonnet of the car. Fielding redials. Columbo returns to his side.
What's the problem?
I can't seem to get through.
You want to try mine?
You have a phone?
Yeah, but I didn't buy it. You know, they're $800. I mean, I told the guy. I said, look, that's a lot of money. And I want to try it out first, so he give me this as a loaner. Is yours a phone tech, sir?
Fielding shifts and bites his finger.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, that's what I got. I figured get the best. But I'll tell you the truth. What's the number for the AAA, sir?
555-4111.
I'll tell you the truth. I tried this yesterday afternoon, and so far I haven't been able to get it to work.
Apparently you left your batteries run down.
No, because I put fresh babies in here myself. Say, look at this, I can't get through. You know what it might be? It might be the mountains. You know, like with your TV reception. The reason you got that thing, that whatchamacallit, the dish, the satellite, the mountains. Maybe here you can't get a clear signal.
Perhaps not.
Oh, which is odd, because of what you said.
He raises his left hand above his head.
Just a second, sir. Didn't you say? Yes, you did. You said when you left your house, after you heard the shots, you called 911 from your car, but how could you call from here? You can't get a signal through.
That's because I didn't call from this spot. It was further up the road.
Well, I don't see how, sir, given the time frame. It had to be somewhere around here. And just to be sure, I came out yesterday afternoon with, like I said, this. And I tried here. And I tried a mile down that way. And another mile up that way. It doesn't make any difference. No matter where you call from on this whole road, you can't get through.
You're wrong, Lieutenant.
No, sir, I'm not wrong. You were nowhere near this place on the day of the killing.
I suppose we could debate that. But frankly, I think it would be a lot more productive if we got some tools and tried to get the engine started.
Fielding opens the boot.
I think you were parked near Mr. Winter's home. And after you killed him, you called from his neighborhood, where you could get through.
Fielding peers harshly at him over the boot lid.
You have the tape recording of my telephone conversation with Jerry Winters when he was shot.
And I think we both know how you did that, sir. The only way it could have been done. You on the extension phone in his den, and your answering machine recording as if you were actually at home. The coroner said the shots came from the direction of the den, and the forensic guy says there were no fingerprints on the telephone receiver in the den.
Fielding finds a rifle case.
Which says to me, it had to be wiped off by somebody.
Narrowing his eyes, shielded by the boot lid, Fielding slips the rifle from its case.
I suppose you're right. Aren't you behaving stupidly, confronting me with this, alone, on a deserted stretch of road? I know you're not armed.
Yes, sir, I may be unarmed, but...
He presses the center of the steering wheel. A black and white police squad car and the cyclists round the corner and head towards them. Columbo waves at them.
I'm certainly not alone. A few of the folks from headquarters out for some exercise.
I see. And there isn't any witness at headquarters?
No, sir, I'm afraid not.
Fielding nods numbly, puts the rifle down, and shuts the boot.
You know, Columbo, I think possibly I may have misread you.
Possible, sir.
He nods.
Possible.
Let's go, sir.
Two uniformed police officers cuff Fielding's hands behind his back. As the undercover police cyclists check over the Mercedes, Fielding is escorted to the squad car. Columbo digs around in all his pockets, looking for something. ITFC audio description by Mark Leavesley.